The PGA Tour presents the fusion of golf, music, sports, and entertainment. Golf Talk America, streaming live on PGATour.com. Follow us today and every day on Twitter at Golf Talk America. Now, the Golf Talk America crew.
And hello once again, everybody. Welcome to Golf Talk America. It is Wednesday, July the 26th, and we're kind of in a tweener stage here. We're coming off of the still high of the Open Championship and what happened with Jordan Spieth at Royal Birkdale, and looking forward to another Open Championship, a little bit lesser prestigious, but still a very, very big Canadian Open Championship. The RBC Canadian Open is going to be taking place tomorrow. So, guys, back at work. There's no rest for the weary when you're on the PGA Tour. So we'll talk about that, and we're going to be talking with Dr. Bob Winters, noted sports psychologist with the David Ledbetter Golf Academy, and we've had Dr. Bob on a number of times, so we'll talk to him in just a minute. Also, Frank Bassett, join us, as always, from the Nashville studios. How you doing today, Frank?
All right. How are you?
Yeah, everything good?
Everything's great. Everything's great. Dr. Bob was on the line. We dropped him, so we may have to redial Dr. Bob. But you want me to dial him right now? Let's just dial him up.
Let's get him in. Where is Dr. Bob?
I don't know. He must have
been anywhere. Yeah. Never know anymore.
Hello.
I think there's Dr. Bob. He's back with us. Hey, Dr. Bob, how are you?
Hey, good morning, Frank. Good morning, Tim. Great to be on Golf Talk America with you guys.
It's great to have you on. I'd rather be down there with you, though, at the David Ledbetter. You say it. You can say it perfectly. The Academy. World.
Long name.
Well, David Ledbetter Golf Academy, World Teaching Headquarters at Champions Gate, Florida.
There it is. Boy, that's a lot, but that sounds good.
Easy enough to say.
Yeah, Tim and I need to just come down there and do the show from the worldwide headquarters on Friday, don't you think?
Oh, I think that would be awesome, you know, except I'm not there at Champions Gate today. I'm up here in the beautiful Berkshire Mountains, up here at Wabika Golf Club, and I have my Nike Golf Schools up here, and I've got about 60 unbelievably talented junior golfers that I've actually been talking about the mental gospel of focus and discipline here for the past 4 weeks. So I'm up here in beautiful New England. It is a beautiful day at Wabika, and it's about 72 degrees, blue canary sky, and I wish you guys could join me here.
He's talking about focus and discipline, Tim. Two things that neither of us have.
The reason we need to do shows with Dr. Bob at his facility, wherever he is because we do need our heads examined. I've been told that a number of times, so it would be perfect to have Dr. Bob picking our brains apart. And I do want to ask you, Dr. Bob, before we get into what's currently going on, and that is what's happening at the RBC, because I have a couple of questions about that involving Matt Kuchar. But let's go back to what happened at the Open Championship. Can you get into the head of Jordan Spieth a little bit for us as best you can and try to make us understand?
Well,
it's pretty rare.
Yeah,
what
I'll try to actually pull out some crystal ball here, but I'm not Nostradamus and I'm not God, but I will tell you one thing. The British Open, the Open, it always provides drama, much like, you know, every one of the Masters, but it always has a different type of drama. I always remember, you know, back when Seve Ballesteros, I think it was Royal Lytham, and he was playing with Hale Irwin, where he actually hit his ball into the parking lot. And we talked about that for generations, all right, the parking lot shot. So now what we will be talking about for the next decade or so, we will be talking about the driving range shot with Jordan Spieth. And this was really very historic. It was great, you know, theater. But I'll tell you what, you know, you take about 24, 25 minutes to play a hole because you're really looking for, you know, rules and regulations. I'll tell you what, that takes a lot out of you. And also would give good credit to Matt Kuchar for actually staying patient and composed to be able to move on from this whole series of events so he can go out and continue to play and really vie for the championship. I thought this Open was really one for the ages, because there were so many things that went on mentally, emotionally, and even physically, you know, for everyone and for everyone watching. I think everyone who was watching was emotionally involved with this.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. And matter of fact, Frank burnt his bacon while he was
I did.
Psychologically getting affected.
I was outside cooking on the deck, fixing breakfast, watching it, and knocked over my orange juice, burned my bacon. I was beside myself, Dr. Bob, watching this thing.
Well,
because I thought
point.
It was over.
I
thought it was over. I was
screaming.
I want
to talk about, you know, Jordan going back into this. Jordan, he really had some demons still with him. And, you know, they asked him on his interview, in these post-round interviews, what was he thinking? And the great thing about Jordan Spieth is he's very honest. If there's not, you know, anything else about Jordan Spieth, he's a gentle person. He's a great, you know, ambassador for the game. But he's very honest, and he really shows his emotions on his sleeves. You see where he grabs his head. He has a lot of, you know, what we call body histrionics. He up and down. He really is an emotional roller coaster. And he did have doubts going into this final round. And he's just thinking about the Masters of 2016. He talks about that. But the one thing that he has, you know, right in his side, he has what we call the second self. And that's his caddy, and Michael Greller. And he's really talking to him in his ear. And Michael is really the rudder to that ship that keeps that ship very stable. Because many times Jordan Spieth's ship gets out of control, gets a little wacky. Michael Greller always sort of has that steadying rudder that brings him back in. And even after about six or seven holes, I think Michael did a great job of psychological counseling when he said, listen, remember where you were a couple of weeks ago? You're down there in Cabo. You're down there with Michael Phelps. You're down there with Michael Jordan. You are one of those type of guys. You are one of the best of the best. So when you have sort of what we call this team efficacy or collective efficacy, it's sort of like a team building confidence. When you've got somebody to remind you how good you are, you know, it helps your belief system, because at that time, you know, in the round, Jordan Spieth, as he has done previously, was leaking oil. And Michael Greller helps, you know, sort of steer that ship back safely into a harbor of, you know, productive momentum. And even though he actually was still hadn't done anything great, he goes to the 13th hole, then he hits this shot that's so wayward. And you see him grabbing his head, and he's going, oh, my goodness, what have I done? So that leads us into a whole new discussion of events. But I think what you really have to say, that this Open victory was really, you know, a great job of personal and team management. That's really what I see with this Open victory. I don't know what you guys think about it, but I will talk about really what transpired at that 13th through the 18th holes, you know, if you want to get into it, because there is so much good golf psychology. There's so much that people can learn from this, and I'll be glad to address all of these different issues.
Oh, that's no, Dr. Bob, that's exactly why we wanted you on today. I was calling it Psych Wednesday because we really wanted you to talk about what your thinking is, or what you think Jordan Spieth might have thought, or Matt Kuchar especially, through that whole series of events and how he recovered. My goodness.
Well, let's take it right from 13. When Jordan Spieth hits this ball so far to the right, I mean, he is 100 yards from where anyone, you know, really thought that anyone could be. In fact, they didn't even actually line the driving range as out of bounds. They didn't really even define anything there, because they didn't, you know, in their wildest imagination, imagine that anyone would even hit it close to there. So during this time, now we have to talk about this, you know, a transpiration of events. You know, what transpired between the time he left the tee box to the time he went to the dune and found his ball? He's there. He's really sort of, his mind is just really probably racing. He's probably going 100 miles an hour. But when he finally found his ball, and I like to compare it to what an EMT or a paramedic does when they come upon an accident, they have to do physiological and psychological triage. That means you've got to separate the most heinous and the worst, you know, accident victim from those who don't need immediate medical help. What the situation allowed Jordan Spieth to do was to really collect his thoughts and take care of what's important and what's most critical now. In fact, this wayward shot, in my estimation, it's only my opinion, but it's the one thing that helped bring him back into focus, because his mind could have been a million different places. And at that time, he was really asking, you know, several questions. The first question was, what are my options? You know, what's the ruling? You know, where can I actually drop this ball if I actually want to drop it? Because he was going to take, you know, an unplayable lie. So he had three different options he could look at. He could look at going back to the tee, all right, and then he'd have to face, you know, another tee ball, and he just hit one so bad. So going back to the tee may not have been his best option. He tried to drop it within two club lengths of where the ball, you know, was going to be, but that really wasn't an option. So he was looking back between his ball and the dune, and how far back could he go? Now, that's really just took a lot of time. No one, and not all the king's horses and king's men, could actually find out really where, you know, he was going to drop it from. But that time where he was directing traffic and he was really sort of getting all of his thoughts, he was really now driving himself into a great cocoon of focus. What am I going to do with this shot now? That's what's most important. And Lou Holtz had a great acronym called WIN, W-I-N. And he said, if you're going to win, you have to focus on what's important now. And for Jordan, it actually helped drive him into this focus, this cocoon of concentration that says, this is what I have to do. Even though it took him a lot of time, you know, all that time, he was focused on what's my one option here. He took care of this one option. And then when he found out what he could do, he asked, you know, Michael, said, just give me a round number. Give me a number. Give me a line. And so he went from a three wood to a three iron. And then when he finally made the decision, he hit the shot. And as you saw him, you know, Frank and Tim, he hit the shot. And now he actually turns away in disgust because he hit a little bit fat. And he thought that he had really, you know, really put it even in more junk. So now, you know, we've got the emotional roller coaster going up again. And as he actually walks over and he sees his lie, he's about 30 yards from the pin. And this, for all listeners and for all golfers, is really what we can learn from the really true great champions. All they want is an opportunity. And what Jordan Spieth wanted, I want to get the ball, you know, from point A to point B as quickly and efficiently as I can. He had that 30-yard shot. Not too many people in the world are better at him than that. But that shot, that wedge shot, I think was the key to him winning because he hit it up there 8 feet from the hole, but he had to make an 8-footer coming back, and he had missed some earlier and had missed them bad. He actually even walked out of them. But, you know, those two shots right there, the chip shot from 30 yards, the pitch, and that putt, were huge. And he walked off the green and looked at Michael, gave him a cat, you know, Cheshire cat grin. They knew they swallowed the canary there. And Michael Greller, again, gives him that, you know, building confidence statement. He says, we've got the momentum now. We've got the momentum. Now, think about that, you know, Frank, Tim. Think about what he just said. We've got the momentum now. And they're one behind. But they had been the leaders, and I've always said this, is that one of the toughest things for golfers, when you're in the lead, you're just trying to hang on to the lead many times. So the lead becomes lead. It's the same word. It's, the lead becomes lead. It becomes heavy. Now Jordan Spieth becomes the chaser. But he also feels like he's done a great job of making the lowest score he possibly could. It gets him back into the game. It creates positive momentum. Michael Greller is saying, we've got the momentum now. He goes to 14, stuffs the shot, goes, you know, the next hole, 15, and actually makes that 70-footer for eagle, and the rest really is history. And if you think he goes 5-under for those four holes, where Matt Kuchar goes 2-under for the four holes, but he's still 3 down, well, that's what great champions do. All they're looking for is an opportunity to just get the ball in the hole as fast as they could, and Jordan Spieth did that. That's how I saw that, you know, turn of events.
Again, we're talking with Dr. Bob Winters, sports psychologist, and Dr. Bob, well put, all of the details of what happened in that stretch of an hour or so of dramatic golf. But Spieth is unique, is he not, in that he can turn it back on fairly quickly. And I've always said that's one of the things that even in his youth that he was very good at. When he'd have a bad hole, and all golfers will have bad holes, he's very good at not letting it linger and it turns into two or three or four bad holes or bad back nine. He turns it around, and he turned it back around so fast, as you said, almost getting a hole in one on the very next hole. That is unique, even among top golfers, that he can turn it that quickly. I think that's one of the unique skills that psychologically that Jordan Spieth has.
It's something called episodic memory, Tim, and we go back into our memory bank. And if we think about things, fear is really one of our greatest memories, and we hold fear very, very dearly. We hold a lot of these collapses, these chokes, these traumatic events. But at the same time, really high achievers go into their episodic memory, and they pull back the positive pictures. They pull back the positive memories. Jordan Spieth, by his own admission, says, hey, I've been in trouble a lot, especially here over the last couple of years. So because, you know, I'm not the straightest, most accurate, you know, performer, he goes, I learned to get out of trouble. But if you just think, just a few weeks back, the Travelers Championship, when he's going into the playoff, all right, he actually pulls one into the trees, gets a fortuitous, you know, a wonderful bounce, a gratuitous bounce out of the trees into the middle of the fairway. He hits, you know, a middle iron to short of the green, puts it in the bunker where he had just been 10 minutes earlier. And 10 minutes earlier, he hit a shot about a foot from the hole. And then in the Travelers, what does he do? He has that shot. He has that great memory. Boom. He actually makes that shot. So when you actually go back into your memory bank and you pull back these positive experiences, this is really what a Jordan Spieth does. And he does this really better than anyone. It's because, you know, what great players do, they always go back to their memory bank. They go back to say, I've done this before. I can do this again, and I'm going to do it right now. That's really what we see in a Jordan Spieth, a.k.a. almost like Tiger Woods used to do many, many times. They'd get in trouble. All they wanted was an opportunity, and they found a way to get the ball in the hole.
Okay, let's back up now, and let's go, pardon me, into the head of Matt Kuchar. What's going on in Matt's head? How does he, given the fact that he has to wait so long to hit the next shot, and also through the rest of the round, given the fact that he's playing some excellent golf and just can't seem to beat this guy?
Well, I can only say this, and I'm going to say this as a professional consultant. One of the things that, you know, Jordan Spieth had going for him was that he was playing with one of the greatest ambassadors of the game in Matt Kuchar. If he had had someone else who had a different personality other than easygoing Matt Kuchar, things could have been a whole lot different. If he had been playing with a Rory Sabatini or a Pat Perez or someone like that, it could have been a whole different emotional climate. But, you know, Matt, he and his caddy were there in the fairway. They were taking their time. They were just focusing on what they could do. But I got to tell you, patience many times in that situation is very tough. Much easier to talk about than to do, but patience is confidence waiting to happen. So in Matt Kuchar's, you know, perspective, hey, he's saying this guy, you know, is getting in trouble. Okay, perhaps, you know, we just keep playing our game. We'll actually come in and we'll finish strong. And he did exactly what he needed to do. But then sometimes you don't lose a tournament, Frank or Tim. Sometimes you just get beat. Someone's best is better than your best. And that's just exactly what happened this week. And we've had two tournaments now. We've had the United States Open, where Brooks Koepka, you know, birdied 14, 15, and 16 to run away from the field, to really sort of put, you know, the closing finish on his U.S. Open. Same thing with Jordan Spieth. In those final few holes, he actually went to the finish line. And it's just like the horse in a thoroughbred race. It just pulls away from the pack. And that's really what Jordan did this week.
I'm curious, too, Dr. Bob, if that will affect in the future going forward Matt Kuchar. He's turning around. He's playing at the RBC Canadian Open this week coming up. Can he put that behind him? Or is that one of those things that you look back on and go, wow, he was never the same, or it took him a while to overcome the fact that he kind of in his grasp within a few holes of winning his first and only major, and then it was taken away from him. Is it going to be hard for him psychologically to overcome that?
I'll tell you what, I don't think so. I don't. And if I was working with Matt, which I don't, but I would tell him, hey, there are so many unbelievable positives that you can pull out of this. It's all about perspective, you know, whether you see the glass as half empty or half full. But for me, it's not just about half empty, half full. is that, hey, we did a lot of great stuff. And now maybe, just now, I'm starting to reach, you know, my absolute potential. Because we always talk about people who finally learn how to win major championships. But you've got to get there, you know, several times. And sometimes you fail, and sometimes you fail miserably, and sometimes you just miss by a shot or two. But I got to tell you, if Matt Kuchar continues on the form that he is, he's going to actually have some great, great tournaments. I mean, I don't think so. I think Matt Kuchar is such a well-balanced, great, easygoing guy. He said it hurt. I watched his interviews, and it was devastating for him. But I think that's how mentally, you know, tough and how resilient he can be. And I think he's a great player, and that's why he's been a great Ryder Cup player, a great President's Cup player. He's a steely veteran. I don't think it's going to affect him very much.
I said after the tournament that Matt probably should call Spieth and challenge him to a high-dollar ping-pong game just to get his confidence back, because Kuchar is well-known as a great ping-pong player.
I don't think, you know, his confidence is shot, you know, Frank. I don't. I just happen to believe you sit there and go, well, you know, hey, we sometimes look around at the 19th hole and we kind of wonder, and we sit here and armchair quarterback it, and hindsight's 20/20. But the whole point of it is you got to ask yourself, you know, hey, I did the very best I could, and hey, that's golf. And hats off to him. I'll get the next one.
Yeah,
and that's all you can do. What? And that's all you can do. And I'll tell you what, my hat's off to Matt Kuchar. But again, that emotional climate, that feeling of gentlemanship between those two at that time, it could have been a whole lot different if it wasn't Matt Kuchar and it was somebody else with a more volatile, more expressive personality than Matt. Okay,
yeah.
So that's just sort of my feeling on that.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And one thing that happened, just for our listeners, is Kuchar's family, his wife and children, flew over Saturday so they could be there and surprise him, because they were so excited he was in, you know, the final group and an opportunity to possibly win his first major and the Open Championship. You saw Matt look, I was looking in as well as I could on TV, into his eyes as he's coming off the 18th green, and he sees his family, and then you see that Matt Kuchar signature smile, and the eyes start smiling, the teeth show, and there's the family, and as Jordan walks by, and this is so important to me, as Jordan walks past, Matt Kuchar's wife stands up. She was squatting down, hugging everybody, hugging the kids. She stands up and hugs Jordan and said, "I'm so proud of you." Now, what better statement for our game than that right there?
Well, there's nothing. And that just goes and speaks to the class of the entire Kuchar family. But it also speaks to the higher values of what we hold dear in our game. And I've always told people, you know, I play to win, you know, and it hurts me when I lose. I mean, as a player, also as a sports psychologist, I want my players, I want them to kind of hurt a little bit. I really do. I want them to feel like they have competed, and they've competed like a champion. But you also have to, you know, to take your hats off and congratulate someone who's done even a little bit better job, because that may be the high point of their career. And so when you walk off and you see your family right there, and you see the love and the smiles, and hey, that's really what life's all about. We're playing a game, even though it's a high stakes game, and we're playing, you know, for the history and the record books. But really, when you really look down at it and keep things in perspective, there's nothing more important, you know, than having your family right there saying, you know what, you are still the world's champion's best in our eyes. And I think that's really the way Matt should look at it. He had a great, great Open Championship, and he's going to have great championships. And I look for him to continue on and have a great, you know, Canadian Open Championship. So, you know, more power to him.
We're talking again with Dr. Bob Winter, sports psychologist with the David Ledbetter Golf Academy, who's in some place called Wabika. Wherever. Wabika.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're up here where there's a lot of black bear, there's a lot of moose,
ooh,
and a lot of deer, but I got to tell you, it is probably one of the more spectacular views. I'm in the Berkshire Mountains.
Oh, wow.
And I come up here every summer, and I've been doing these Nike golf schools, and I helped start them back about 27 years ago. And I get a chance to actually teach young golfers you know, about the mental and the emotional game and about how important having a great attitude is, because your attitude on the golf course will determine not only your altitude, how far you go in this game, but how far you go in the game of life. So one of my key tenets here is getting players to understand the most important number in golf is one, and one shot will get you going. And that is exactly what I've been talking to them about this week, the Jordan Spieth, Matt Kuchar, you know, showdown, and really how one shot, the pitch shot and the putt that he made on 13 really turned things around. And I've been around some unbelievable players over the last 40 years almost. And everyone I've seen always talks about there's always a key shot or a key putt that turned everything around for me. And for most players who they always want to hit, you know, the big ball and the power ball, I got to tell you, you got to fall in love with that wedge and you got to fall in love with that putter, because as Willie Park once said, and Jordan Spieth is so good at this, Willie Park once said, the man or woman who can putt is a match for anyone. You know, the man or woman who cannot putt is a match for no one. And I got to tell you, when Jordan Spieth was younger, just like I'm helping some of these junior golfers here, he just loved, you know, the practice range, the short game range, the putting green. And it reminds me years ago when I was at Jennings Mill when some of my players were on PGA Tour qualifying, and Jennings Mill was one of the sectional sites. There was a plaque by the green, and it was dedicated to Vicki Goetz, and she's now Vicki Goetz Ackerman. But Vicki Goetz was one of the shorter hitters on tour, but she had an absolute unbelievable short game and great putter. And they put a plaque next to this putting green and next to this practice green because she spent so much of her developing years developing an unbelievable world-class short game. So if you want to be a major champion, or you want to win your club championship, or you want to get your handicap down, fall in love with that wedge and fall in love with that putter. And we had a perfect example of Jordan Spieth. I mean, he's making putts all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's fantastic.
Dr. Bob, okay, you just said that. Now, I have a big match coming up next week, and you've counseled me before when I've had to play this gentleman, Roger Sarchet from Los Angeles, and you know him, you've met him, and you counseled me on how to play against him, because Roger is Seve Ballesteros on steroids when it comes to gamesmanship. I mean, he does everything in the book, to mess with your head. So give me one nugget here so I can beat him, because he's coming to town on fire. He's telling me his game's on. He's coming to take me out.
I tell you what, you know, the biggest thing is that I've always seen, and I've seen a lot of crazy cats. All right, in my day.
Roger would be one of those.
A lot of some of the best gamers, the best gamblers, and people who really thought they were hot. But it's so funny is that when a player hits a good shot, I just think sometimes killing them with kindness, you know, making a big grin and go, wow, you know, I don't think anybody else could have hit that shot. Maybe but me, you know. And you just kind of laugh. You just kind of just kill them with kindness. But you've got to get in your own game. Don't let this guy get in your head again, Frank, because this guy is really good at sort of pushing your buttons. So,
he is,
you know, you can control your game, but when he hits good shots, just smile and say, hey, that's just Raj. That's what he does. And just let it go. Let it go. And I think that's the big key here, because so many times we get in sort of this match play, mano-a-mano situation.
Oh, yeah.
And it's 50% what you do, 50% what he does. I don't like that philosophy. I can take 100% control of what I can control, and whatever he does, it's out of my control. So let's control the controllables, and let's have a great time being Frank Bassett and playing great golf. And every time he hits a great shot and he looks at you, just smile at him and go, you know what? I'm gonna get you. And in the end, I'm gonna get you. Just smile. Kill him with kindness, Frank.
You got it. Thanks, Dr. Bob.
Hey, Dr. Bob, before we let you go, I have one last question I'd like to ask. Going back to the Spieth victory at the Open Championship, we have good memories and bad memories, as you were talking about, on the golf course, and good holes and bad holes. This obviously seems to be something that is such a positive, the result of the tournament for for Jordan Spieth that it should linger for a long time. Will this linger? Will he be able to draw on this positive when he's in a hole in 2 years and 5 years and 10 years down the road, or will it kind of fade? And is it positive reinforcement like this? Does it last as long as the negative ones where you worry about, oh, I choked before, it's going to happen again, and all those doubts come into your head? Does one last longer than the other, whether it's a positive or a negative memory that you have in golf?
Well, I'll tell you what. I had a player one time, Tim, tell me this. He said, Dr. Winters, he goes, winning never makes me feel as good as losing makes me feel bad. I'll repeat that one more time. I think it's such a profound statement. He said, winning never makes me feel as good as losing makes me feel bad. And what we know from, you know, the psyche, from the emotional outpouring of people, and when they talk about, you know, these negative emotions, negativity is so much stronger than the positivity. We are not conditioned. We're not even hardwired for happiness and for positivity. It's something that we learn. Our brains and our bodies are hardwired for survival and to keep the organism alive. So, you know, don't and negative images and fearful memories, these are really exacerbated in the memory. And we hold on to these negative memories so much longer than we do the good shots. So, I mean, and we are almost conditioned from this at a very early age. Even if we have spelling tests, instead of saying you had 8 right, they'll put like -2 at the top. You know, you missed this. That's a miss. That's a miss. So we're conditionally always inculcated with this feeling of negativity, of, you know, of doubt, of worry. So, yes, the negative emotions, but you've got to fight through those. And you've got to fight for your self-discipline and for your positivity. It's hard to be optimistic. And a lot of people go, you know, that's not realistic. And it seems to me that a lot of people take a lot of realistic, logical, critical thinking, and they turn it into negative thinking. So to answer your question more succinctly, yes, negative memories are very, very strong.
Yeah.
But you've got to pull, you know, the good from the bad. And that's something I'm always trying to tell you. And, Frank, you can pull this, you know, for this next week with your match. You always want to pull something positive out of every shot, and especially every putt, regardless whether you miss it or not. Because if you can pull something positive out of it, you're actually helping to sustain positive putting, positive playing momentum. And that's exactly really what Jordan Spieth was looking for. And Michael Greller did a great job of helping him create that one shot. This is the one shot that will get me going. And so if you have these negative thoughts, you've got to let them go and focus more on something good. But yes, you can have a positive memory, and you can tap back into that as much as you can. I don't care how many years it is. You know, if I did it once, I know I can do it again. Let's do it now.
Wow. That's great. That's good stuff, Dr. Bob.
Well, that's great. I'll tell you what, you know,
I
always enjoy talking with you guys, because the main thing is most people think, well, you know, the pros, you know, they never have any doubt. They never have any, you know, worries. They never have any cataclysmic events. We just witnessed that this weekend. We saw a guy who was on one wild emotional roller coaster ride, which is kind of his MO, but he always finds a way to right the ship. And it's amazing how the quality of men and women who are playing the game today can really take the ugliest of situations and turn lemons into lemonade, and it tastes pretty sweet.
There it is.
Perfect. Well said, Dr. Bob. Thank you so much for your time once again and some great insight into the game of golf, into everybody's heads when they're playing the game. And have a great time in Wabika, and we'll talk to you again very soon, okay?
All right, you guys, and good luck in your match, Frank, you know, coming forward. You know, kill them with kindness.
You got it.
Smile a lot and play hard, all right?
Thanks, Dr. Bob. It's always great to talk to you.
All right, guys, have a great, great day.
You too.
Okay, you too. You too. I think what I got out of that, Frank,
wow,
is that you need Michael Greller to caddy for you in your match next week. And you'll be fine.
I'll give Michael a call.
See what he's doing.
Actually, I did reach out to him last night. I've not heard back yet. So we'll try to get him to join us.
Because I'm pretty sure he's off for a couple of weeks until he's head to Charlotte. So
he's taking a break.
You probably have some time.
So there you go. So it's our Psych Wednesday.
You know what I do, Frank? Here, and I'm being serious about this. But here's what I try to do, because I can get like anybody, I guess. You can get kind of ticked on a golf course when you hit a bad shot, and we all do. And you're like, oh, what the? Because very few shots ever go as planned. Very few. Even if you play well, you still miss hit most of your shots. It's just the nature of the game.
Right.
So what I try to do is, if I hit into a bunker, right, as you're obviously trying to miss the bunker and hit on the green.
Right.
I always think to myself to try to calm myself down. You know what? That could mean I could get a really great up and down out of the bunker, which is not my forte. I wish I was better at it. I'm not. But I always try to think, okay, and once in a while you do it, it's a great par, isn't it? I mean, if I just two-putt for a par, but if I can hit out of the
up
bunker.
Up and down and for a par.
And hit it within 4 feet and make the – I feel really good about myself. Yeah. So sometimes I try to take that bad shot, as long as it's not OB or doesn't cost you a stroke, and say, okay, now even if it's in the rough or somewhere under a tree, maybe I can hit a really great recovery shot after this. So, you know, at my level, I hit a lot of recovery shots.
Yeah.
But I try to make it that way. I'm not all ticked off walking down the fairway to hit my next shot going, oh, God, that was the worst. Because then you get in the bunker and you leave it in the bunker, right? And you're like, because you're so mad that you can't even get it out of there. Now you're going to get a double.
You go for the cocoa butter. Yeah. Just go get the cocoa butter and lube up and put a blanket down and lay out and get some sun. Yeah. I mean, come on.
There's always some good. I mean, you're playing golf, right? I mean,
yeah. Dr. Bob's the best. I love Dr. Bob. He's so insightful. Yeah, he really is. And he's got the best hair in all of golf. Best hair.
You know, his wife, he probably drives his wife crazy because he is so positive that once in a while you're like, would you just get mad at something once in a while? Something? Honey, it's going to be okay. Everything's fine. It's not fine.
I think he did get a little upset when I was taking his clubs out of his bag and rearranging them. I'd put his 3-iron where his 7 should be. And messing with that.
That was all messing up.
Dr. Bob's the best. I love having him on. Well, you know what? It's our Psych Wednesday, and you know, that was good. I don't know that we can top that. I don't think so.
Speaking of hey, Frank, there's a little key word for me. Top. You know what I'm doing today?
You're going to Top Golf. What are you going to do at Top Golf?
So I have my wife's niece and nephew are in construction business, if you will, and roofing. And
how you doing?
In the sales part of that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
For a company. Okay. And they don't play golf. And so they know, obviously, that I do. But their company is really big, and their owner of this company, which they've only been with now for like 6 months or so, is really big on golf and loves to play golf. Well, of course, they're smart enough to go, well, then we should probably like golf too. It wouldn't hurt to play with the boss and all that kind of stuff and corporate outings and company stuff. So they've asked me to go with them today to Top Golf. One of them doesn't even have my wife's niece doesn't even have clubs.
Yeah.
Her nephew has some, but, you know, God only knows what they even look like. I've never seen them, so they don't play. So they want me to go and at least give them some basic – I'm not going to teach them, but at least give them some basic understanding. I thought Topgolf would be a good place to do that because you can't hurt too many people at Topgolf.
Wait a minute.
You know?
It's cool, but last time I was at Topgolf, I was with Billy Horschel, Boo Weekly, and so, some other tour players that will go unnamed, and I almost killed Horschel.
So, with a stray ball?
Yes, three straight dead cold shanks,
Really?
Well, I'd just gotten off a flight, and it was in Las Vegas, and we just won't even go into why. But but it was – Horschel took his club back away from me. He said, give me that. Go sit down and have a drink.
You can't hurt somebody, I guess, anytime there's a golf ball in play. But anyway, we're going to try to have fun, and I'm going to try to at least get them to learn how to hit the ball that way, you know, in the right direction.
Okay.
And then they'll, I guess, hook up and get some lessons and whatever else. But, it's going to be interesting. We'll see how it goes. The good thing about Top Golf is you don't have to get out in the sun. They've got, in our case here in Dallas, they've got misters and things because it'll be 100 degrees.
Oh, yeah.
So they'll keep us cool. And there's beverages and food and everything right there. They have a hostess. And if people haven't been to Top Golf, there's one in your area. Yeah. You really should check it out. It's a lot of fun.
A new one coming to Nashville this year. So we'll be there for that. So that'll be good.
They're blowing up. I mean, they only started, I don't know how long ago, 10 years ago, 8 years ago.
Yeah, sure.
And there's going to be like 200 of them around the country here pretty soon. So
our good friend Lincoln Silver is, we need to talk to Lincoln. And also that construction company. Anyway, all right. Well, it was good. I guess we ought to, go do something like play golf today, maybe. You think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. It wouldn't hurt.
I got to go
practice. Give Michael Greller a call.
I did. I've already called him, so I'll hear back from him. He's very responsive.
He'll be more than happy to come play with you in Nashville. You know what? It'd be worth it. For us today. To be Roger.
Oh, God.
Thanks to Dr. Bob Winter, sports psychologist, for joining us today. And hopefully he gave you some good insight and some positive reinforcement for whatever you do today. Go out and make it a great day. And Dr. Bob, we'll take just a small amount of credit for doing that. We're glad he was on. Can't wait to have him on with us again. For Frank Bassett, I'm Tim Matthews. Thanks, everybody, for listening to us here on Golf Talk America. Please join us next time. And until then, have a great day.